A Novel Podcast is looking to produce more episodes, and we want you to join us. If you like reading novels and then talking about them, then you're a perfect candidate. We record remotely, so your location on Earth isn't a consideration, and no prior experience is necessary. Send us an email or a tweet, and let us know what books you'd like to discuss. anovelpodcast@gmail.com or @anovelpodcast. Look forward to hearing from you. You're listening to A Novel Podcast, in-depth discussions of literature from all genres and generations. I'm your host, Russell. I'm joined by my wife, Sarah, and our good friend, Julie. And today we're discussing A Man Called Ove, a 2012 novel by Friedrich Bachmann, a Swedish columnist, blogger, and writer. It was published in English in 2013 and inspired a film of the same name released December 25th, 2015. This book was suggested to us by Julie, so I'd like to ask her to kick it off. Julie, how did you come across the book, and what did you think of it as a novel?
I was given this book by my sister for Christmas, I think primarily because it's a Swedish author, and we are Swedish. So I think that she had no idea what an amazing book this was going to be and what a lasting impression that it was going to have on me.
I love that.
So cheers to you, Sister Elizabeth.
So did she read it? She read it after you did, right?
She read it after me, yeah, which is kind of interesting. I think she, you know, like I said, I think she solely picked it up, obviously, because of the Swedish author. And because occasionally we'll throw strange books at each other. So I would say the reason that I loved this book so much, it's my favorite thing when I get done reading a book. And I can't stop thinking about it. And I know that's I think not an uncommon thing for heavy readers. So
yes,
I felt like this author did such an amazing job of his description of this character of Ove, and really all of the characters, that I could see him in my mind. I could see his facial expressions. I could see what he looked like. I could feel his feelings. I could feel where they came from. I felt like I knew this character so well. And I think that that's just such an amazing thing when an author can do that. And I think the other reason that I would say, so I would say I absolutely fell in love with this character. I love him so much, have a big, big crush on him.
Yes.
And one thing, and this is just a kind of a personal thing about me, I happen to love grumpy people in general. I don't know why I'm drawn to very grumpy people. I like them. I don't know whether it's because I've thought about this before. I don't know whether it's because I feel like it's like a challenge to see if you can, you know, crack a smile from them, or because generally they just don't care about what other people think. But so I think that's another reason that I was very drawn to the character of Ove.
Thinking about this novel and the relationships of the characters, I have to ask, is Ove the Rick to your Sonia?
Rick being Julie's husband.
You know what? That might be a really, really good analogy.
I sort of felt that Ove was the Russell to my Sarah, if I do say so. Although I'm not nearly as altruistic or good or kind as Sonia was.
Oh, good point. Neither one of us are. Hmm. But she's all...
You're closer than I am, though.
Oh, that's so nice. But... So not true, but thank you. I'll take it.
I think it's a sliding scale.
Right. Well, maybe, right. Maybe. It's a real low bar with us. But, no, I do think that, you know, you wonder... I say that with love for both of us.
With love. Nothing but love.
You wonder if... and I always wonder this, and I always think it's interesting when authors address it, is when people obviously remember their loved ones fondly and they forget like a lot of the, you know, the harder stuff or some of the more annoying things of obviously like living with a spouse or this or that. But
so I thought that too as I was reading, like, do we see Sonia as such a altruistic, amazing character because we're only seeing her through Ove's eyes,
right?
And she's obviously, I feel pretty strongly, obviously the only person that Ove cared for at all. I mean, not cared for at all, but the only one he outwardly displayed affection for.
Yeah.
So are we seeing her with these rose-colored glasses? And another thing, before we get too far into it, I think it's amazing that this was Backman's debut novel.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable, right?
Because he absolutely, like, the characterization was amazing. I loved the story. I liked the storytelling, the back and forth. I don't always like the motif of, like, reflections back in time to tell the story. But I feel like it was handled very well here.
Agreed. Definitely agreed. We've discussed this before. I have trouble with that at times, but yes. I thought they did a great job of it. That's a really good point.
It wasn't hard to follow. It. I feel like it really added to the narrative. It helped to build up.
Yeah.
As to why Ove was Ove.
So before we get too deep into it, let's give a quick plot synopsis. Sarah, would you like to give us a vague synopsis of the plot?
I'll run through it briefly. So speaking of going backward and forward in time, it opens with Ove purchasing an iPad, or attempting to purchase an iPad. And you sort of have no idea why this is happening. And having worked in customer service for many, 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 many years of my life, I loved this scene. Because you just have this old curmudgeon who wants what he wants. And the salesperson is trying very dearly to provide him with what he wants, and it's just not happening because curmudgeon ain't having it. So, you know, here's the question. Why is Ove Ove and what's happening? So the story sort of goes back and forth through present day and in the past to tell the story of Ove, who is a bit of a grumpy old man. He has new neighbors that move in, and Ove sees them doing nothing right. Which I think his observations are pretty humorous, and that might just be my dry sense of humor coming out. But as they're moving in, they back into his mailbox, and he's angry that they can't drive they could drive a stick. They couldn't drive a car with a trailer on it, the husband. And the wife doesn't drive at all, and she's very pregnant, and she's foreign, and there's a lot of strikes against this family at the time. So you're bouncing back and forth between cranky old Ove, and then we go back in time and find him falling in love with his wife and seeing what happened there and seeing his relationship with his family and his father and how he developed into what he is. And then eventually we come back to present day, and throughout the story it's going back and forth in a way that I really feel is a lovely reflection of who Ove is today versus why he is that way and the events that have caused that. To us coming present day, and Ove sort of single-handedly taking on all the challenges in the neighborhood and solving a lot of problems that are happening, and the resolution to his story, which I hate to give away because it really was a beautiful ending.
Now, I actually read this book on paper, which is something I don't do very often. And really, I missed a lot of pieces behind this story. Did the neighbors ever give him any reparation for the damage that they did? To me, it seems like that would have been unforgivable had they not said, hey, here's a check, or hey, we hired a contractor to fix the damage.
I don't think so. I think Ove fixed it himself, right?
Well, that does seem like something he would do, yeah.
They wouldn't have found a contractor good enough for him.
True.
Yeah.
Then secondly, he does, of course, meet the love of his life, his wife, Sonia.
Yes.
I did come across at one point in time, he mentions that it was the second and the final time that he lied to his wife. I never picked up on what was the first lie.
Oh my gosh, I don't remember.
What was the second and final?
I don't remember.
Well, wouldn't the first time have been... So the very first time he saw her, he got on the train and pretended to be in the army.
Right.
That must have been it.
So the entire premise of them meeting was a lie, which was probably the first lie Ove ever told in his life. But he got on the train, and I believe she thought he was a soldier just because of where he was getting on the train. Hmm. But in actuality, he was a railroad employee. And he pretended to be a soldier for months, if I remember correctly, just so that he could ride on the train beside her.
Mm-hmm. Your voice cracks. I know. So sweet. Love it.
I know, right? Oh, I do have a thing for grouchy old men. I can't lie.
So you'd mentioned something earlier that reminds me of something I picked up from the book. You do hear Sonia saying something to the effect of, the longer that you love something, the more you come to love it, rather than in spite of its imperfections, but rather because of them. Now, I, for one, do not understand how or why anyone could come to love Ove or even want to be around him. But does the does Ove's love of people...
That's because you are Ove.
Am I Ove or am I the neighbor?
And that's why neighbor? We love you, Russ.
I know.
What was his that's... neighbor's name? The one he had a feud with?
Oh, Rune.
Yes.
You might be Rune. Way. You could be Rune. I do love that name. You but were asking a question.
I was. Ove. So does Ove's love... Does Ove love people and things for their imperfections? Is that why he comes to love the neighbors that me, I would look at and think, oh, he's never going to come to love them at all? And do people love Ove for that same reason?
Oh, I don't think he loves imperfections at all.
No, I agree.
I think that he loves, like, you know, I love how they basically force themselves on him. I think that that's glorious.
Yes.
That's the only way to break through, I think, to grumpy people, which I completely 100% love that. Love to do that. I don't know why. But I think that he likes things that are perfect, and he likes things that fit just right. And that makes me think of him and his tools and building things and whatever. But I think that it's obviously a glorious moment whenever he figures out that, you know, there's beauty and imperfection, and these people are an example of that.
I don't know. Do you feel... I feel like he never admitted to himself that there was beauty. Maybe he never admitted it to everyone else, that there was beauty and imperfection, and that it was okay to be disorderly and wacky.
Yeah, maybe that it's not... Yeah, let me rephrase that. It's not okay. It's not okay. There's not beauty and imperfection, but
he learned that he could tolerate
it. Yeah, he'll tolerate it. Yes, Sarah, that's a much better way of putting it. It's still not okay.
It's not okay. It's still
going to bother him, but he'll tolerate it.
And you should really pull your stuff together here, because it's embarrassing to live next to you, from Ove's perspective. But he will begrudgingly fix the window that you destroyed and repair his mailbox that you ran over and give you a ride to the hospital because you can't drive yourself.
Right.
And
I'm going to take a radically different stance on this. And I admit that these ideas are not entirely my own. I did read them in a blog many moons ago. But I would say it's almost as if those imperfections are a kind of drug that Ove and his personality absolutely need. Think about it. Ove loves things that have a purpose. He loves vehicles and machinery. He loves things that are useful. He likes being useful himself. And when he's forced into retirement, that and losing his wife are the things that cause him to contemplate and ultimately attempt on numerous occasions suicide. So his worldview is that he's become to believe himself to be useless. Is the imperfections of other people, their sheer incompetence from his perspective, and a feeding into his need to be useful and giving him a purpose, even though he feels like he has none anymore.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that could be it. I think that when he sees something that's not perfect or something that needs to be done, he feels like it needs to be perfect. It needs to be fixed. Like, he could never have a vehicle in his front yard that wasn't working properly. Just like he can't have a neighbor next door that has a broken mailbox or whatever it is. Whatever it is, it has to be righted. And he feels like, well, somebody has to do it. And I'm, you know,
I suppose I'm the only one that's capable of doing this.
Right, right. And also because, you know, young people are worthless nowadays and they don't do things properly.
I think so.
But how does the cat fit into all that?
Oh, I loved the cat. I mean, I didn't care for the cat just in general, but I loved that Ove... The cat was just this blip on the radar that Ove didn't need, didn't want. But here's this problem that needs to be solved.
Right.
So I think the cat was symbolic of Ove's overall journey here. Here's this problem that needs to be solved, and the problem slowly grows on him until it gets to the point that Ove and the cat are a team, and they're going to take care of the neighborhood together and conquer the yappy dog next door together. And so one of my, I mean, it's a terrible favorite part, but when Ove built the electrocution trap for the little dog, who does that? Ove does that. But he had rigged up like a battery to a metal plate so that when the little dog came over to pee on his yard, the dog would be electrocuted. And the cat, I mean,
kind of amazing.
Right. The cat in Ove's mind talked him out of it with a look. And he was like, yeah, you're right. Probably shouldn't kill the little dog. I think that part made me laugh out loud.
That's so awesome.
Oh, I'm so disappointed you didn't like this book as much as I did.
No, I I really, something about it, I missed it. I mean, for one thing, Ove is supposed to be 59 years old, but he looks and he acts like he's 90.
That's true. I never pictured him at 59.
Yeah.
He was more like...
59?
Yeah, are you sure 59?
What?
Quite certain, yes.
I feel more like 75 plus.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
But then in addition to that, he hates... He wants to be useful, and yet he can't be bothered to learn how to buy proper insurance. He can't be bothered to actually learn what piece of computer equipment the young lady wants. He acts just like an ignorant bastard. Anything he doesn't understand must be garbage. And you mentioned that the author writes characters very well. I got the feeling that they wrote caricatures very well. Everyone seemed so goofy and out of proportion that it was almost hitting you over the head with their personality. I do feel like it would have made an exceptionally good short story. There were parts of it that I found very entertaining. I certainly wasn't bored, but at the same time, it went on extraordinarily too long. I'll compliment the author on something that you had mentioned also, the alternating storyline.
Yes.
The way that it would jump back and forth did a tremendous job of the same kinds of things that I can appreciate in television shows like Lost or other novels like Harry Potter, where you get a glimpse of something and you're wondering, wait a minute, where does this fit in? Or you get a glimpse of something missing and you're wondering, wait a minute, what fits in there? For example, the scene where he's buying a computer.
Yes. Why would he end up there?
Mm-hmm. So you do get this really nice, I can't think of a good analogy for it, but almost a lock and key where everything kind of falls into place in the end.
That's true.
I agree.
There were numerous things about the characters I appreciated also. It reminded me very much of Gran Torino. Grumpy old man set in his ways, but in the end doing something extraordinarily good for neighbors that he probably wouldn't have even liked at all had he not been forced to give him a chance. And then in his very fun, my way or the highway kind of way, he reminds me, of course, of Red Foreman, who's one of my favorite characters of any fiction. Oh, I liked very much when he goes to visit Sonia's father-in-law. It almost seems like he's extraordinarily uncomfortable, didn't want to be there, but then, oh, wait, you have a truck that needs to be fixed? Oh, let's work on that. Now we have something in common.
The language they speak.
So do you feel that Ove was a well-fleshed-out character? Fleshed out.
I think that the author did an extremely good job fleshing out that character, but Ove himself as a character does seem extraordinarily one-dimensional. Almost as if he has some kind of what modern over-anxious psychologists or psychiatrists would say he has some kind of disorder.
Oh, I think that's clear.
Okay.
I think that's clear. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that anyone with those types of tendencies, you know, obviously he's some sort, I'm obviously not a psychologist or anything, but like some sort of OCD or mm-hmm. something like that would be the first thing that would come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what's so interesting is that's why I do think that he's very believable as a character, because somebody who has those types of tendencies, we all have those types of tendencies to a small extent, but then you can think of how somebody's mind wouldn't be able to let go of certain things. You know, our minds are able to let go of certain things, whereas people who have those OCD tendencies aren't able to. And so that was kind of how I pictured him.
Well, my question is, do you think that Ove seemed so single-minded and so driven, and the other characters seemed, as you put it, Russell, more like caricatures, because we were seeing this entire story through Ove's eyes? While it wasn't told in first person,
right,
it was definitely told from the perspective of Ove. And I think from Ove's perspective, he was very driven, he was very focused, and he only saw the other elements in his world as caricatures. Until towards the end of the book.
Could you say that Ove was a simpleton?
No.
I think we're sort of led to believe that he's a simpleton in the beginning. He's too, well, as you so eloquently put it, he's too ignorant to learn which iPad to purchase for the child. But I think that through the storytelling, it's revealed that he's much more deep and much more caring and much more compassionate than we are ever led to believe initially. And more so than he appears on the surface, and more so than anyone would assume.
At some point during the novel, aren't we introduced to his methods of eating? He likes meat and potatoes and doesn't understand why you'd eat anything else. Am I remembering that correctly?
I think so.
I'm sorry, are you talking about Rick Wolfington? Oh no, we're talking about Ove.
Yes, in a manner of speaking. So to answer your question, if he is in some ways a simpleton, and in other ways a very, perhaps just a plain and simple man, he likes simple things.
I like that description, yeah.
When he sees his computer programmer neighbor who never does any work, programmer's the wrong word, he was a consultant, an IT consultant neighbor who never appears to do any work, with his foreign wife and loud, overly friendly children. Yes, you would be seeing it through the Ove filter, much the same way that, you know, you have to look at all the Harry Potter novels through the Harry filter.
Right.
Yes, I can see that being exactly what is going on there. He's seeing everything he dislikes about them in such grandiose, the end of the world, the sky is falling kind of ways, that's the way the author is writing it, even though it is in the third person perspective.
Yes, that was my
excellent observation.
Take.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because since it's coming from his perspective, he's going to obsess about those particular personality traits that drive him crazy, and hence they become caricatures, you know?
Exactly.
The way that, but now when you guys say the word simpleton, are you referring to like slow, like not very smart, or just somebody who leads a simple life?
I think
both.
I wouldn't think that at all. I think that he's obviously.
I think if he were to apply himself, he could be extraordinarily intelligent.
I think that he is extraordinarily intelligent. Anyone that can,
I think he is intelligent.
Work with his hands the way that he clearly can, and fix things and build things and build traps and do this and do that.
Build a house.
I mean, that's the opposite of me. I'm the person who, you know, sits at a desk and can type real well on the computer, you know, so I can solve math problems, but that's about it. But
yes,
I mean, I think that that type of, just because he's not willing to learn things that he thinks are, you know, bumpkus.
I think you're running this through the Russell filter.
Exactly. I certainly don't think that that makes him a simpleton.
Exactly. Like, he feels an iPad is a ridiculous piece of technology, so why would he learn about that? Exactly.
I'd bring that then to the Good Will Hunting theme of, you're a genius, why are you a janitor? You have such incredible intelligence, why don't you apply yourself to various fields? No, all he wants to do is build. All he wants to do is fix cars and build houses. Okay, well, that's fine. That's what you want to do. That's totally fine. He clearly could apply himself to anything and learn anything. He just chooses not to. Does that make him rather than a simpleton? Does that make him an ignoramus?
Oh, no, not at all.
I would use the term,
I don't want to buy a new iPhone. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't want to buy a new iPhone because I don't want to change. You know, my mother's not on Facebook because she just can't handle the thought of trying to learn something new, you know?
But you don't want to buy a new iPhone.
No.
But if you did want to get somebody the thing that they wanted, someone you cared for very deeply, mm-hmm. if your husband said, well, I want the new iPhone and you want to get it for him for his birthday, you could at the very least be polite to the people who do know what they're looking for and take the time to do the research to find out what it is that you need to purchase precisely.
Well, yes, Julie could, but Ove wouldn't.
Oh, right. But I'm not OCD.
Yes.
So it comes back to the disorder that may or may not exist.
Yes. I think...
Or whether we want to call it OCD or whether we want to call it... Clearly he has obsessive tendencies. Yes.
So I think that Ove just sees that as not having value. He should be able... And I speak from experience for dealing with someone who maybe thinks this way sometimes. He should be able to walk into a store and say, I want this product. And they should put the product down, tell him how much it costs. He should be able to pay for it and walk out.
But wouldn't you think that he would be intelligent enough to know that he can't walk into a hardware store and say, I want to buy a bag of nails, and know that there are 50 different types of nails to choose from?
Yes, but that's because that's his area.
Right. When he walked into the hardware store, he would say, I need a half inch flathead.
Right.
You know, whatever, blah, blah, nail.
Tenpenny.
Out of those 50, he would name the one that he needed.
But yes. He can't understand that you have to do the same thing when you go to buy a computer.
Right. But no. But listen.
No.
He would go to the hardware store and he would name the one thing that he needed. And there would be only one choice because he knew exactly what he needed.
Yes.
This is
agreed.
A world that he can't even wrap his brain around because he hasn't even entered it. He doesn't even have a computer. He doesn't even know. And part of me understands how daunting that could be and how mm-hmm. different that world is. Because I do. I think of somebody like, you know, my mom or, mm-hmm. you know, older people who just.
Well, then he has no interest.
They didn't grow up. Right.
So why would he.
How could this, you know, flat book thing with keys tell me what I need to know?
With no keys. Yes. This doesn't even have keys. Shouldn't a computer have keys?
You want me to buy this one with no keys. That okay. was the whole point. There's no keys.
Do you want me to pay extra for these keys? I'm trying to think of an area that I just have, like, zero interest in.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm supposed to go buy, like, a wrestling figure.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to walk in and be like, give me John Cena. And they're like, well, we have the 8-inch, the 12-inch, the 58-inch, the talking one. I don't care. Give me the one my kid wants.
Care.
Thank you.
Right. Exactly. I can totally relate to that.
I don't even know if that's a relevant wrestler. That's where I stand on this.
He is. My husband's okay. a fan. I'm with you.
Good job.
I can sing the song if you'd like.
I would have said Undertaker.
Right. Let me have your finest jingle. Hulk Hogan. And I said finest. So he wants to, I mean, that's Ove. He went in, he said, give me your finest iPad.
Is it a good one?
And then the guy's like, well, we have 6 options. And he's like, that is some garbage right there. Just give me the best one.
Right.
Thanks. I'd like to leave this store now. All of your wrestling figurines are making me uncomfortable. So I don't think,
so true.
I do think, I reject your term simpleton because I feel like that does imply.
Mm-hmm.
A lack of intelligence.
Okay.
But I think he is a simple man, which...
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
We can scrap simpleton. That was the wrong word.
Yes,
but
I don't
like a simple man
word.
With plain tastes.
Simple yeah. man, plain tastes. Mm-hmm. He knows what he wants. I'm frustrated that you can't just give me what I want because I've described it very clearly to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care to learn more about this so that I can tell you in more plain terms exactly what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And because of his personality, he's more likely to feel frustrated with you rather than feel that he needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe I've met him before. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. So that's why, yeah, I don't like your... he's not a simpleton. He's.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's very intelligent. I mean, it's like if you're judging a fish by its ability to ride a bicycle. Like, well, if you're judging this old man by his ability to purchase technology, then no. But could anyone else in the book build a house from the ground up or modify a house when their wife lost the use of her legs and had to be in a wheelchair? Maybe Rune. Rune was sort of his foil.
Yeah.
Rune may have been able to do that. So I felt that Ove and Rune were a bit, and this might be a stretch, but I definitely got a bit of a Death of a Salesman vibe from Ove. Like, here's Rune, who had, well, had many things that Ove wanted. Ove and his wife wanted to have children. And here's, Ove views himself as being a clearly superior specimen. Sonya is better than Anita. They have, he buys better vehicles, he builds better houses, he likes his job more, because that's the way Ove views himself. He's made the right choices. Period. And they couldn't have children. She was pregnant and lost the child. And then here's Rune, who was able to have a child, and the child, I believe, was ill-behaved, and basically rejects Rune, and they have no contact after the child is an adult. And just thinking about that from Ove's perspective, you know, here's Rune who has what I want, and he can't even do that right. I really felt added a layer to Ove's character.
Did Rune also fail to do oil changes in his vehicles, things like that?
I can't remember specifically.
But that seems like exactly the kind of thing you're talking about.
I think so. But then remember how offended, because they went through the car purchasing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they would each one-up each other with the cars when each year, sticking with their favored model, until Rune came home with a completely different model. And it just, that's not the game we were playing.
That's a great way to describe it.
What was the significance of that?
I think it was an example of Ove wanting everything to be in order and to have a rhythm and to have a place. And Ove is very focused on, I don't think perfection, but order and tidiness and an orderly life. And part of that order was one-upping each other with a new vehicle of their selected model every year, every other year, whatever the schedule was. And here's Rune, who has the child, who has XYZ, that Ove maybe secretly covets, but he just breaks the game. You're going to go buy a Buick or whatever he brought home. And I think it was just another example for Ove of how other people can't live up to the life that he would like to leave and the life that he is expecting.
No, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
No, I have nothing to add. Julie?
Nope, agreed. It was an interesting relationship to watch that I never fully, I think, kind of cracked. But I think that that was a good description of it. Because at first I thought, well, they have this relationship because they're so much alike. And that's why they just couldn't handle, you know.
Yes.
Two yins, you know, no yang. But then I think that it also kind of showed how unforgiving and how Ove's compulsions would, the kind of extremes,
yes,
that his compulsions would lead him to. To the point of cutting off this friendship because of something so insignificant. On the surface anyway, but obviously digging a little deeper, and I think it went, you know, as Sarah said, more towards, you know, him having, yes, those things.
Well, and I think, I mean, it was
flushing them away.
He would never admit to it, but I think it was a game to Ove, and to find out that someone wasn't as committed to the game as he was disappointing yet again in his life.
Right. You know what, for him, for him to realize that I thought there was somebody else out there like me.
Yes.
Like, I thought that I was normal. And then to realize that, you know, or maybe not that I think he absolutely thinks he's normal.
Well, yeah.
But I thought that I thought I had an equal out there.
There's somebody else normal out there.
I thought I had an equal out there that wouldn't disappoint me. But apparently everyone's going to disappoint me.
Yes, exactly. He thought there was someone else that had standards.
Yes.
And here you are. You don't even have standards.
Which makes him...
A BMW.
Right.
You came home with a BMW. Do you not remember the game we were playing? So I think it made it almost more poignant when Ove learned to be flexible and learned to bend. And in the end, really saved the day for Rune and Anita. And just learned to have a different sort of crusade and a different sort of... struggling to find the word that I'm looking for. Because he strove for order and he strove for rightness. And one of the first activities we see him doing in the very beginning after he fails to purchase an iPad is patrolling the neighborhood in the morning and making sure that locks are locked and lights are on and doors are closed, etc. So for him, that was part of his purpose. And he's feeling, like you pointed out, Russell, that he's lacking in purpose at this point.
Mm-hmm.
His wife has passed.
Right.
He doesn't have a job. You know, his house is already repaired. There's nowhere left to go. So then here comes this cat that needs help and these neighbors that are just a mess. And eventually he finds out that Rune, his frenemy, his arch nemesis, his former friend, is in dire need of help and can't defend himself. So it gives Ove that purpose. But he, along the way, learns, I think, that it's okay to bend a little and be a little forgiving. And maybe ignore what you would see as imperfections and just embrace... Well, I don't know if he embraced, but you can be there.
Tolerate.
Right.
He decided he can tolerate these things and prevail and be useful. Like, one of the things I really liked was he met the boy at the coffee shop who was gay, and Ove just kind of took it in stride. And I think all throughout the novel... I was anticipating that Ove might not be okay with this. And instead he was like, well, that's fine. Where's the coffee pot that needs to be fixed? I really need some coffee.
Right. I loved that.
Right.
Just going to show that somebody who has these obsessive tendencies has them for certain things.
Right. And then
not,
when...
And not for, you know... They're not, it's not that they're just extreme on everything. They just, there's these certain things they can't let go.
Right. Like, I need that coffee. This is serious. And then when the guy's father really, I think, kicked him out of the house when he found out, Ove welcomed him into the house. It wasn't, well, maybe not welcomed, but I mean, allowed him into the house.
And tolerated
him being in the house because here was a problem that needed to be solved.
Right.
You need somewhere to live. I need a project.
He's frustrated with Parvina that she's so difficult to instruct how to drive, and yet he's persistent in instructing her how to drive. He's frustrated with that kid who he thinks is stealing the bicycle, but he's really just trying to fix it, and yet he helps the kid who, you know, you're old enough, you should be able to fix a bicycle, but if you can't, okay, I'm going to help you fix it.
Yes. They're all projects. And Ove needed a project.
So what do you think Ove's influence on the Parvina's daughter is? I've lost her name. When she's a grown woman, how is she going to look back and see this man?
Well, I feel like I have sort of a unique perspective on that. In that, apparently, one of my grandfathers was a pretty curmudgeon-y old guy. But when I look back and remember him, it was absolutely nothing like that. And he may have been, but he was my pap. And that's not at all the perspective I have. So I probably projected onto this a little heavily, but that's how I imagine the daughter would grow up. And she probably didn't even notice that he was a crank. She's just going to grow up with these memories of, you know, Ove, who she drew pictures of and he hung them on the fridge, and Ove, who... taught her mother how to drive and who bought her the iPad so that she could make her art and had a cat next door, etc. But I imagine he'd rub off on her a little bit. Like, maybe she can really fix a bicycle when she's as an adult. Or she really likes the house to be painted or some Ovish tendency.
Right.
Probably stretch her own canvas, hang it up all by herself.
Right, right. Maybe she'll see the value in...
She'll have the best science projects in class.
That is true.
So we keep going back to Ove being a grumpy old man, and everyone seems to like those kinds of characters. I mentioned him reminding me of Red Foreman and Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino. Did you parallel in your mind Ove to any other popular fictional grumpy old men?
Oh, he looks just like the guy from Up in my head.
Mm.
I mean, you know, live action, but yeah, that's exactly what he looks like.
Oddly enough, that's how I pictured Rune.
Okay, yeah. I kind of pictured them both looking similar. Like, maybe one wears a red cardigan and one wears a green.
Mm.
Not bright red, though. That. Sort of a muted, rusty. Yeah, and like, maybe one is a little taller and one's a little more stout, but...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in my head, Ove looks just like the old man from Up. I've still never watched it the whole way through. I have the mom syndrome where I fall asleep.
There's a character named Russell in that movie.
There is a character named Russell.
Oh, I love that movie.
But that character is not you. You're the old man.
What?
Julie, no old man parallels? Did you like the movie Grumpy Old Man or As Good As It Gets?
Oh, As Good As It Gets is one of my favorite movies.
That's such a good movie. I would not parallel him to him, though. But I think your Gran Torino is pretty good. And I love the Up reference.
Yeah, that's what he looked like.
And then if you want to see a funny movie with grumpy old men, obviously by the time we're listening to this, it'll be long past, but we have just gone through the presidential election. If you want to see a movie about grumpy old men, you should watch My Fellow Americans.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Oh, it's terrific. It's got Jack Lemmon and... I'm blanking on his name, but the guy who played Rockford from the Rockford Files.
Walter Matthau, right?
No.
Not
Walter Matthau, the other one.
I love that.
Oh, the other one.
The Odd Couple, that's a good movie.
The other one. So, speaking of movies, though, I did not realize this book had been made into a movie.
Me neither.
And I am absolutely terrified and pretty sure I don't want to watch it.
Well,
because I don't want anyone messing with my Ove.
I'm really upset because when I looked it up a few minutes ago before we started talking, they showed the main character, him. And so...
Oh, was it Ove?
I feel... Yeah, I'm really... You know, he wasn't the Ove in my mind. And I just looked and then I stopped looking and I'm going to try to get it out of my mind because... I tell you what, I think I would be okay with it if I... was the kind of person that was okay with that type of thing in general, but I just, you know what, he is how he is in my mind and I want him to stay that way. So I'm going to try to forget the movie Ove.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am very open and honest about how I'm a book snob. Like my characters are my characters. And I'm looking now at Ove and should I not?
I mean, I would keep yourself innocent, but...
Oh, yeah, that doesn't look like Ove.
No, but I don't know how it could, you know, how he could.
Maybe if he was wearing the exact outfit of that guy from Up. Maybe, but I don't know.
So, you mentioned that in the end, Ove has a slight of... outlook change and winds up saying, okay, yeah, Rune needs my assistance, let me fix this. The family next door needs my assistance, let me fix this. And then in the end, of course, one of my favorite points in the book is says, oh, do you have many robberies? Oh, you never have many robberies before you have the first one. And in the end, him wanting to fix it, wanting to be in charge, causes disaster to strike. And I found the language used in that scene to be a little bit flowery, almost to the point where I didn't know precisely what had happened. Was he shot?
I believe yes.
Or is it just open to interpretation? He was injured. Someone hit him with a crowbar. He was shot. You're not sure. course, the scene was dark. He didn't know precisely what was going on. Is that the point, that you don't know what happened? He was just injured?
Well, I think it was a fatal injury, right?
No.
Yeah, it was definitely.
No, if memory serves, it was not.
It was not?
No, because he spends quite a bit of time in the hospital recovering. And of course, when you're in a hospital bed, you're subjected to people being around you. You might not necessarily want to be there.
If they would have killed him off, I would have been super ticked.
So final question then is, how important is it that Ove be a man? What if this had been about a grumpy old woman? How would the book have been different? Would you have appreciated it as much? I know Sarah's a big fan of the Golden Girls. Although I don't know that I'd describe them as grumpy.
No, they're not grumpy. A little grouchy, but...
Well, Sophia.
Sophia.
And she is kind of the favorite, so...
She's feisty.
Right.
Maybe if you put a Sophia spin on it, then I guess that's okay. But Sophia, they explain away in the very first episode as having...
A disorder?
Yeah, like dementia or something. I don't remember exactly. But there was a reason Sophia was the way she was.
The other three didn't have an excuse.
They were just old. They didn't care anymore. They're just going to tell it like it is. I think that I will admit to having, in general, I don't find grouchy old women to be nearly as delightful as grouchy old men, and I don't know why.
I mean, you know, I think that that would definitely go back to just the whole, you know, man-woman dynamic.
Yes.
You know, I wonder if Russ would be more drawn to the book if it was a female character. Because it is somebody who you do. We both said, oh my gosh, we kind of fell in love with this character. You know?
Like, to the point that maybe we and actually just... literally married Oves.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So I think that...
Did you marry an Ove?
You know, Are you asking Russ?
Yes.
He's like,
looking deeply into his eyes. Asking if I'm Ove.
I honestly have no idea what you're referring to.
Am I cranky? Are you anticipating me being a cranky old woman?
Not in the least.
Okay, good.
Oh.
Maybe you should. I'm going to ramp it up.
I feel more like I married Parvina.
Oh.
Not going to be able to drive. Right.
You can drive. You're not a horrible driver.
That's extremely generous and kind of you to say. I'm not a horrible driver. Very generous and kind. I believe I'm a fine driver. Thank you very much. Oh.
Well, you paint the picture.
Uh-huh.
I'll open up the floor for any final comments about A Man Called Ove.
The only thing that I will say is actually, I saw today that the author released a short story. And I took a photo of it. The name of it, I was going to send this to you guys. Uh-oh, I must have taken it with my other phone. You do your final thoughts, and then I will tell you guys the name of this novella. They're calling it a novella.
Well, I know that he has other books. I should have looked this up beforehand. But there was something, tell my grandmother I said I loved her, or something to that effect.
I've not read anything else by him. Have you?
No, but my final thought is that I would really like to.
I concur. Okay, here's the name of his novella. It is by Frederick Bachman, and it's called And Every Morning the Way Home Gets Longer and Longer.
Oh, it's called My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry. And it's pretty highly rated on Goodreads, not quite as high as A Man Called Ove. But I would definitely be very interested in reading that.
Concur.
Oh, there it is. And Every Morning the Way Home Gets Longer and Longer. It is currently at a 4.2 on Goodreads, and A Man Called Ove is at a 4.42. And A Man Called Ove is at a 4.32.
Wow. That's impressive. That might have to pick up to that. And I'm right not now. Usually a novella kind of person. Might have to expand my horizons.
No. Maybe it'll be one of those 99-cent Amazon deals.
Right?
because it's a novella.
Love that. Russ,
but
what you
I
got?
Really liked Ove.
Oh, sorry. Sarah's final thoughts.
I know, sorry. My final thoughts are rambling and incoherent. My final thought is that I feel like and felt like this book would be just universally loved. And I thought that when you were going to read it, Russell, you would really connect with Ove and appreciate it and think it was funny and like it. And then when you finished and you were like, meh, it was fine. I was so sad. Maybe not sad, but just I was surprised because I liked Ove so very much.
It's like someone telling you that they don't like one of your friends. It would be like Russ telling you he doesn't like me. Be quiet, Russ.
Oh.
No comment.
Yeah, for the best. Yeah.
There are plenty. Sarah has plenty of friends who I dislike.
Don't worry. Fear
you,
not.
You, Julie, are not one
excellent.
Of them.
Fear not.
You have not yet made your way into that elite club.
Oh, give me time, friend.
Elite club. I have recommended A Man Called Ove to probably just about everyone in my life that even sort of implies that maybe they've read a book once. Like, oh, you should read this. It's great. This was one of my favorite books that I've read probably since The Help, which was one
Ooh.
Of my...
Ooh.
Yeah.
And yet you were not afraid to see that movie.
No, I wasn't, but I had heard that that was a very good movie to book.
Mm.
Book to movie
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
translation.
Mm-hmm.
And with The Help, I didn't have a clear, strong picture in my head of what they were supposed to look like.
Mm.
Ove, I feel like I've given him such a special treatment in my mind
mm-hmm.
that they are going to have him deliver a single line wrong and he's going to seem like a jerk instead of a lovable old crank.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I'm going to be very sad.
I agree.
I'm afraid of yeah. what they would do to the character. And maybe I should get over it and just watch the movie. And maybe when I'm a little further removed from the book, I will.
Hmm.
But, I don't know, at this point in time with two young children, it's not like I have time for movies anymore.
Right.
I will fall asleep within 15 to 20 minutes, so why pretend?
Good point.
Well, I don't actually have very much to add.
Did you like it?
I didn't entirely dislike it, but... It was a bit of a slog to get through.
Oh.
I would have liked it much more as a short story. And then you bring up a good point. You seem to just have fallen in love with the character of Ove. And
all the characters, but yes.
I can't think of any characters that I have found to drive a story. The only thing that I can think of where a character is the thing that I liked more than anything else is Deep Space Nine, the character of Garak.
Hmm.
But typically when I do fall in love with characters like that, it's always the mysterious ones. It's the ones you don't see very much, like Ambassador Kosh from Babylon 5, Radagast from The Lord of the Rings. It's the characters I love are the ones you don't know all that much. Perhaps the ones that you get a... glimpse of, and everything about them is shrouded in mystery. There's a bit of you have to fill in the blanks behind these characters. So typically when there is a character that I absolutely love and am enthralled with, it's always a secondary character of some kind.
Hmm.
Or even in the case of Radagast, a tertiary character. That being said, I did enjoy the book. I found that the literary aspects of it were definitely there. And could appreciate it and would recommend it to anybody who likes reading various genres.
Okay, so out of five.
Mm.
Are we doing halves? I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
2.5.
2.5?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I just
two
feel
and
like
a
it's
half.
A five. I think I have to go five.
Oh, I'm at
I mean,
like
I read this
4.
Book a year
9.
Ago and mm. I just... still see him in my mind and can feel him.
Does it not
and
just make you
that
smile
amazing.
When you think about it?
I can feel his...
It could be a five.
Soul. That sounds like I'm trying to be deep, but like I just still feel like I know him. That's a
that's
better way to
cheesy,
put it.
Pretty cheesy, but...
And that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, 2.5. I can't even believe you. Oh, yeah. It's like, I don't know, at least a 4.75, if not a 5. I... always shy away from giving full fives, but I really liked this book. It's probably a 5. I should look and see what I actually rated it on Goodreads. It might have been a 5 for me. Because you can't do halves there. You gotta do it.
All right, so then just to wrap up, would be any final thoughts outside of A Man Called Ove? What have you been reading lately, and what do you think we ought to discuss next?
I have dropped back into my guilty pleasure of reading the Outlander series.
Ditto!
I'm on Voyager for the second time through, and while it may not be literature, I sure do like it. And I think that Jamie and Claire are characters that I fall in love with, and they can drive a story. So I kind of want you, Russell, to read Outlander, but then at the same time, I don't want you to say bad things about them. So I'll probably leave it on the for Russ to not read list.
No, it's too big.
It's too big. It is like a quadrillion pages. Or 800. So that's what I've been reading.
And how are you doing in the Chronicles of Prydaine?
Good to very good.
Just last week, we recorded an episode on books 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And then in the coming month or two, we'll record, of course, an episode on book 5 and the short story series, The Foundling.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to make the third episode?
Oh, no. Next week?
No, I said the next month or so.
Oh, next month or so.
Probably before Christmas.
I mean, it could happen.
I am extremely pleased, though, reading that book to Glenn. When we first started, which was, oh boy, 2-3 years ago.
I don't know.
You know, I'd read him a chapter and say, okay, so what did you think of that? I don't know. Well, what happened in the story? I don't know. Well, what did Taran do? I don't know. And now I'm saying, well, what do you think's going to happen? I don't know. I think they're in trouble. Okay, so do you think you should go north or south? I think definitely north. South of the marshes or the south. That would be bad.
Good deal. So he's pulling it together a bit.
Mm-hmm, quite a bit. And Julie, yourself?
I'm going to have to echo Sarah. I am reading Voyager.
Oh.
Dying a little bit.
So far?
I slugged through. I took a really long break because book 2 took me a while to get through. Well, and I moved and, you know, yada yada.
I know. It's just, we're ramping up. It's November.
And now 3 is fantastic.
Is it not so good?
And I was still listening to Dune like every now and again, and then I updated the iOS on my phone and couldn't find it on my phone because, hey, speaking of people who hate technology, oh wait, that's what I do for a living. Never mind. Right. Don't tell anyone that.
You like the paycheck.
So I just found it again, so I don't know. You know, I've drug it out so long, but I do remember what most recently happened, so I might get back into it now that I've found it again.
That's right.
I'd appreciate that. I would like to record that episode, and I think the dynamic of having 3 on the show really aids a lot to that.
It's important.
I know. I'll get there.
Okay, I believe it.
I need a really long drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where I have nothing else to do except listen to my audiobook.
So just like drive to Arizona for no reason.
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah, from Maryland. That would be like long enough.
It's a good idea.
It's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Dune, I couldn't do it on paper. But listening, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very pleased I finished. Mm-hmm. But we'll save that for the Dune episode.
Mm-hmm. So I just finished reading Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, and
oh,
it was fantastic. Absolutely terrific. Fodder for discussion above and beyond. In addition to that, I've, of course, been reading and rereading The Chronicles of Prydaine, because on the podcast we've been discussing that series. I've also been interested in a Brandon Sanderson book, Elantris. He is, of course, the man who completed the Wheel of Time series, which I have not read. The original author died. Brandon Sanderson was one of the people who helped complete the series. I've heard Elantris is an excellent place to start there. And one of the members of the other podcast group, Miles, recommended that we do Agatha Christie. And I would be interested to read a little bit of Agatha Christie and perhaps throw in some other detective novels or something else, perhaps compare and contrast. Of course, I've always mentioned that I am a big Asimov fan. The his robot series, the detective series, would go very well against, say, Edgar Allan Poe's The Purloined Letter. But, of course, I'm always open to read anything. As much as I disliked A Man Called Ove, I'm very glad to have read it.
I can't believe you disliked it. I mean, I can totally believe you disliked it.
I can appreciate that sentiment. I've had that feeling before.
And I, of course, can't thank you enough for the first book that we reviewed, the All Light We Cannot See. Ooh, that was a sleeper hit for me. So I'm well. You throw as much mud up against this wall as you want. We'll see what sticks.
Oh, I've decided that the like Victorian novel I'd like to read is Pride and Prejudice due to outside recommendations.
Okay, Pride and the original or the one with the zombies?
Not with zombies. No,
I would totally be down with the one with zombies. Just saying.
Yeah, but I want to read the original first.
All right. Anything else to add, anybody?
I would watch the movie, The Pride and Prejudice with Zombies, because I'd probably only stay awake through like 20 minutes of it. It's a quick commitment for me. Yeah, I'll watch that. No, we've rambled. But you said Wheel of Time, and I recently added that to my Goodreads list, and I also added Pride and Prejudice when I made that decision, so...
I would gladly read Wheel of Time, although if we're thinking Sanderson, I'd rather start with Atlantis.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to read Ender's Game. That's pretty high on my to-read list.
Cannot recommend it enough.
I just got to take care of a little problem with Flat Stanley at the library. That jerk.
That Stanley.
That Stanley. Doing me no favors.
And since we did mention movies, I will say that the most recent... Ender's Game movie, and I believe the only one that was ever made. Halfway decent.
Oh, you watched it already?
Mm-hmm.
Way to wait for me, Daddy.
Way to go, Russ.
Your track record with YAF is not good.
YAF.
Young adult fiction.
I should read that.
I don't think that's true.
Prydain.
Ugh. Prydain is ancient young adult fiction.
Oh, the 60s, ancient.
Oh my God.
You're the one who wants to read Pride and Prejudice.
It's before I was born.
A little bit. All done. Na-na.
All right, anything else to add?
All right.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night.
Hey, thanks for joining us.